A hush fell over the crowd in the street as Matt, Sam, and the other men emerged from the jail with their prisoner. Folks stared wide-eyed at the notorious bandit leader, their expressions a mixture of curiosity, anger, and nervousness. Joshua Shade was probably the most hated man in the territory, as well as the most feared. People stood aside to create a lane through which Matt and Sam dragged Shade. They reached the town hall, forced him up the steps, and inside the building. The jury had already been agreed on by the lawyers, and the 12 men were seated in a row of chairs against the wall. All the other chairs were full already, except for one at a table up front. Matt and Sam recognized the elderly, white-bearded man sitting at the table as Colonel J.B. Wilmot, who was going to handle Shade's defense. At another table sat Mayor Wiley and the town prosecutor, a slender, fair-haired man named Finch. Sheriff Flagg was waiting beside the empty chair at the defense table. He nodded to Matt and Sam as they manhandled Shade up to the table.
No need to sit him down yet. Just hang on to him for a minute if you would. Hey, everybody, hush up! All rise for the Honorable Julius Stanfield.
Be seated. This court will come to order.
Matt and Sam each put a hand on Shade's shoulder and forced him down into the empty chair. As soon as they let go of him, though, he bolted up again, staring in pop-eyed hate toward the judge.
Sheriff, take whatever steps are necessary to restrain the prisoner so that we can have order and decorum in this court.
Yes, Your Honor. Randy, go get a rope.
No need.
The voice came from Stan Hightower, who was in the front row of the spectators.
There's a lariat on my saddle, and my horse is right outside. I'll fetch it.
Flagg nodded for the rancher to go ahead. Hightower left the town hall and returned a moment later with a coiled riata of braided horsehair. He handed it to Flagg, who wrapped the rope around Joshua Shade as Matt and Sam forced him back down into the chair.
I dislike being forced to these measures, sir. It's undignified, and I don't like such things in my courtroom. But you forced us to this point. Counsel is ready to proceed?
Prosecution is ready, Your Honor.
Wearily, Colonel Wilmot rose.
Counsel for the defense is ready, Your Honor.
I'll listen to opening statements if either side cares to make one. Mr. Finch?
Yes, Your Honor.
Finch launched into a speech that lasted several minutes, all of it devoted to declaring what a vicious, bloody-handed owl hoot Joshua Shade was. He wasn't saying anything that everyone in the courtroom didn't already know, but that didn't stop him from saying it anyway. When Finch was done, Colonel Wilmot got up again.
The defense has no opening statement, Your Honor.
Very well. Mr. Finch, call your first witness.
I call Sheriff Cyrus Flagg, Your Honor.
Flagg took the witness stand, which was a ladder-backed chair at the end of the table where Judge Stanfield sat, and told what he knew about the events of the night when Shade and his gang had raided Arrowhead. Colonel Wilmot had no questions for him. Following Flagg's testimony, Finch called a half a dozen other leading citizens, all of whom had witnessed the atrocities committed by Shade's men. Even though all the spectators knew what had happened, they listened in rapt attention as that violent night was recreated in the words of the witnesses. It was all a little boring to Matt, who had never been long on patience to start with. Finally, Finch called Matt himself to the stand to testify about how he and Sam had discovered one of Shade's men on the hotel roof after the outlaw had killed Charlie Cornwell, the lookout.
You and Mr. Two Wolves were still on the roof of the hotel when the rest of the bandits attacked the town?
Yes, sir, that's right.
In your own words, tell us about the battle that followed.
Matt did as Finch asked, and described the parts he and Sam had played in the defense of the settlement. After Finch thanked Matt and Wilmot said he had no questions for the witness, Stanfield told Matt to step down.
I could spend the rest of the day and all day tomorrow calling witnesses who would tell the same story, Your Honor. And I see no point in that. The prosecution rests, having proven its case.
That will be up to the jury to decide, Counsel. Colonel, you may call your first witness.
The defense has no witnesses, Your Honor.
Colonel, as an attorney, I'm sure you need no reminder that your client has a right to the best possible defense you can give him, regardless of the circumstances of your own personal feelings about the case. You have asked no questions of the prosecution's witnesses, and now you say you intend to call no witnesses of your own?
That is correct, Your Honor. I cannot present witnesses to call the facts of the case into question because they are so clear-cut, and because the testimony of the prosecution's witnesses cannot be refuted. Therefore, our defense will consist solely of my closing statement.
Your client won't even testify on his own behalf?
I deem it inadvisable, Your Honor, considering the inflammatory statements he's been known to make. I fear he would simply prejudice his own case that much more.
Very well. Does the defense rest?
It does, Your Honor.
Stanfield looked at Finch.
I'll hear closing statements.
There wasn't much Finch could say, other than what had already been said. He repeated what a varmint Joshua Shade was, although in more high-flown language, and sat down. Wilmot rose again.
Gentlemen, take a good look at my client. He's wearing shackles and leg irons. He's been gagged because otherwise he would have subjected this courtroom to a stream of profanity and obscenity and threats the likes of which none of us need to hear. We all know what he's done, the deaths he's been responsible for, the deaths he has carried out with his own hands, the suffering he's inflicted on the citizenry of this territory. I deny none of that. But I would have you ask yourselves a question. Why? Why has Joshua Shade done these things?
Because he's loco.
Now that is exactly correct. He's as crazy as an animal with a belly full of loco weed. Now, you wouldn't hold an animal responsible for its actions if that happened. And neither should you hold Joshua Shade responsible for this. He should be locked up someplace where he can't hurt anyone else. Not executed. Now, that's all I have to say, Your Honor.
Well, that's an unusual defense, Counselor. But if you feel it's the best one you have...
It's the only one we have, Your Honor.
Very well. You can now begin your deliberations and continue them until you have reached a true verdict.
The men glanced at each other for a second. Then the one at the end of the row, closest to the judge's bench, stood up.
I reckon we're done, Your Honor.
In that case, what say you?
We find a defendant guilty of murder, robbery, assorted banditry, and anything else you want to charge him with, Judge. Matter of fact, we find him guilty as hell.
A simple verdict of guilty will be entered into the record. Does the defendant have anything to say before I pass sentence on him?
Shade struggled against his ropes as if he were trying to stand up.
I don't suppose it matters now, does it?
Flag motioned for Matt and Sam to take the gag off Shade.
Leave him tied in the chair, though.
Sam untied the bandana around Shade's head.
The Lord will strike you down. He will visit plagues and abominations on this town and everyone in it. You'll all die screaming for mercy. Rivers of blood will run in the streets and your women will cry over the broken bodies of their children.
Flag motioned for Matt to stick his gag back in Shade's mouth. Matt did so, shutting him up.
That was an inspired defense, Counselor. Unfortunately, the jury has reached its verdict and now I shall pass sentence on the defendant. Normally, I would have him rise to hear this, but under the circumstances... It is the judgment of this court, the defendant Joshua Shade having been found guilty, that he shall be hanged by the neck until dead, and that this sentence shall be carried out immediately in this jurisdiction.
Mayor Wiley leaped to his feet.
But, Your Honor, we don't want him to be hanged here.
Then you should have thought of that before you put on this trial. You tried him here. You can hang him.
Just a moment, Judge. Could I have a word with you?
The crowd parted, and a tall man in a dark suit strode forward. He was middle-aged, with a face tanned to the color of saddle leather and a nose like the beak of a hawk jutting out over a dark mustache that framed a wide mouth.
Who in blazes are you?
The newcomer moved the lapel of his coat aside, so that the badge pinned to his vest was visible.
Deputy United States Marshal Asa Thorpe. I've come for Joshua Shade.
What do you mean by that, Marshal?
I meant just what I said, Your Honor. I have here a court order signed by a federal judge placing Joshua Shade in my custody.
You can't have him. I've already pronounced sentence on him.
I didn't make myself clear, Your Honor. I'm not here to interfere with these proceedings or to set aside the verdict reached by this court, with one exception. The federal government wants Shade to be hanged at Yuma Prison.
Stanfield leaned forward in his chair to study the paper Thorpe had placed in front of him.
What's the meaning of this? Why would the Justice Department do such a thing?
I have no idea, Your Honor. All I know is that I happened to be in Tucson after wrapping up another case, and I received a telegram from the Chief Marshal ordering me to accompany you here to Arrowhead and take charge of the prisoner if he was convicted. But when I went looking for you, I found that you'd already left, so I had to follow you instead.
This is highly irregular.
My guess is that Washington wants to have a hand in Shade's execution because he's stolen a couple of Army payrolls. Those were federal crimes. They could have me take him in for a new trial in those cases, but I reckon they figure since he can only hang once, there's no point in going to that much trouble and expense. They'll let the territory of Arizona take care of it, as long as they get some of the credit.
This document appears to be in order. And since it doesn't void the verdict of this jury, or affect anything except the place of execution...
No, we didn't want Shade hanged here anyway, Your Honor.
Irregular or not, I suppose I have no choice but to honor this court order and place Joshua Shade in your custody, Marshal, to be taken to Yuma Prison and hanged at the earliest possible opportunity. This court is adjourned.
Sheriff Flagg turned to Matt and Sam.
Keep an eye on Shade. Me and the deputies will clear the place out before we take him back to jail.
They didn't have to try very hard to do that. Many of the spectators were already pouring out of the town hall, headed for the saloons and a chance to rehash the day's events over a drink. Once again, Flagg and his deputies surrounded Matt, Sam, and Shade as the procession made its way along the street. But this time, they had the marshal with them, striding alongside with his right hand resting on the butt of the Colt holstered at his hip. Thorpe's cold-eyed gaze was enough to make most folks step aside. Shade had stopped trying to talk. He hung limply in the grasp of the Blood Brothers as they hauled him along. They took him into the jail and didn't remove the gag until they had him back in his cell with the shackles and leg irons off. Even then, Shade didn't say anything. His expression had turned dull and lifeless, as if all the fight had finally gone out of him. Once they were all in the sheriff's office, Thorpe finally spoke up.
Why don't you introduce your deputies to me?
Flagg carried out the introductions of Johnson and the other men, leaving out Matt and Sam.
What about these two hombres?
You said to introduce my deputies, and they ain't sworn in or nothing. Reckon you'd have to call them volunteers, but their names are Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves.
Bodine and Two Wolves, eh? I've heard of you. I bet there aren't very many lawmen west of the Mississippi who haven't heard of you.
You make us sound like some sort of desperados, Marshal.
Not necessarily. But you have to admit, hell seems to have a way of breaking loose wherever you two happen to be.
If not for these boys, I expect Shade and his bunch would have laid waste to our town.
Really? I'd like to hear about that.
Matt and Sam weren't given to boasting about anything they had done, so Flagg explained how they had discovered Shade's gang was about to raid Arrowhead and had warned the town. When the sheriff was done, Thorpe nodded.
Sounds like these folks owe you a debt of gratitude, all right. From everything I've heard about you, though, you boys like to drift. What are you doing still here?
After being partially responsible for Shade getting locked up, we wanted to see what was going to happen.
And we didn't figure it'd hurt anything if we gave Sheriff Flagg a hand, either.
Darn right it didn't hurt anything. It's been good having these two hombres around. Might not have been able to stop those lynch mobs without them.
Then I suppose the federal government owes you its gratitude, too. And a reward for capturing Shade, if you care to claim it.
We're not bounty hunters. You can keep your damn blood money.
I never said you were bounty hunters. But if you got a reward coming to you...
We're fine without it, Marshal. All we really wanted is for justice to be done.
It will be. You can count on that. Shade will hang just as soon as I can get him to Yuma.
I was wondering about that. How do you intend to get him there?
The railroad's well south of here. I'll need a wagon to transport him that far. And then we'll take the train the rest of the way.
Reckon we can supply you with a good sturdy wagon. You'll need some men to go with you, though.
I have my own shackles and leg irons for the prisoner. I can handle one man without any trouble.
One man, sure. But what about 25 or 30?
Shade's gang?
That's right. They're still on the loose, and they're liable to come after him.
How long has Shade been locked up here? Almost a week?
That's right.
And you haven't seen hide nor hair of his gang during that time, have you?
Well, no.
There you go. They've abandoned him. Someone else has taken over the leadership of the gang, and they moved on to greener pastures. You know, owl hoots have no loyalty to anything except their own best interests. The concept of honor among thieves is just a myth.
I don't know. From everything I've heard, Shade's men would follow him right into hell. I can't see him just riding off and forgetting about him.
Then why haven't they tried to rescue him?
Because they know everybody in town has been waiting for that very thing to happen. Even a bunch of outlaws have to be smart enough to know that they'd be riding into a real hornet's nest if they tried to bust him out of this jail.
But if Shade's being taken all the way across Arizona territory by only one man, they might see that as a perfect opportunity to rescue him.
They're not going to be foolish enough to interfere with the federal government.
They stole army payrolls, didn't they? They didn't seem too afraid of the federal government then.
What are you suggesting I do, then?
Take some guards with you. I'll bet you'd have half a dozen volunteers from around here at least.
And we'd ride along, too.
Absolutely not. How would it look if a deputy United States Marshal had to enlist the aid of a couple of notorious gunfighters to help him do his job?
Well, like he had enough sense to know when he was outnumbered.
No, I won't do it. I suppose it wouldn't hurt anything to take some other men with me, but not these two.
I think you're making a mistake. Bodine and Two Wolves are two of the best fighting men you'll ever see.
And as I pointed out, men like them attract trouble. Shade's gang will be more likely to leave us alone if Bodine and Two Wolves don't come with us.
Matt opened his mouth to tell Thorpe that he was as loco as Colonel Wilmot had made Shade out to be. But before he could get the angry words out of his mouth, Sam closed a hand around his arm.
Come on, Matt.
But this stiff-necked star pack...
That's the way Marshal Thorpe feels about the situation. Then we just have to honor his decision. He's the law. It's up to him to handle things however he wants to.
Matt stared at Sam in disbelief. It wasn't like Sam to cave in like that to some damn fool. But it was true that Thorpe was now the top dog around here when it came to the law. If the Marshal wanted to, he could order Flagg to lock up the two of them until he had left Arrowhead with Joshua Shade. Matt didn't want that to happen.
All right. Have it your way, Thorpe. Just don't look for any help from us if you find yourself facing Shade's whole gang.
That's not gonna happen. But if you can find me some good men, Sheriff, men who aren't trigger-happy gunslingers, I'll interview them and deputize several of them to come with me.
Come on, Sam. Let's get out of here before I say something I regret.
Sam followed his blood brother out of the jail.
What the hell's so funny? Not that damn fool lawman, that's for sure.
Actually, I was thinking that Thorpe really doesn't know you very well.
Of course he doesn't. I just met the loco hombre an hour ago.
No, I mean he can't have heard all that much about us. Or he'd never think that Matt Bodine would go along with such a bad idea so easily. Or me either, for that matter.
You mean...
I mean that we're going to make sure Joshua Shade reaches Yuma, so that the sentence of hanging can be carried out.
Whether that varmint Thorpe likes it or not?
Exactly. Whether Marshal Thorpe likes it or not.
Ike Winslow's heart pounded heavily in his chest as he approached the place where he had left the outlaws. Dusk hung over the landscape now. He had waited until it started to get dark before leaving Arrowhead, thinking that his departure might more easily escape notice that way. Not that anyone had paid much attention to him anyway. He had drifted around the town for hours, nursing beers in several different saloons, and talking to anybody who'd passed the time of day with him. Two shadowy forms suddenly materialized out of the twilight.
Hold it right there. Is that you, Pilgrim?
Ike recognized the voice of the outlaw called Garth.
It's me. I found out what you wanted to know.
That's good, Pilgrim. Mighty good. Get down off that horse and tell us all about it.
I'm not telling you anything until I know that my wife and son are all right.
The other man stepped forward. Ike had already recognized the big sombrero, even in this dim light, so he wasn't surprised when he heard Gonzalez's sinister purr.
Let me teach this foolish gringo a lesson about how he ought to talk to us, Garth. I'll make him tell us everything he knows.
Back off. If you cut him up, he won't be any good to us anymore if we still need him. I've learned my lesson. Come on, Winslow. Your wife and kid are fine. I'll take you to them.
Ike dismounted then and followed Garth, leading his horse. Gonzalez fell in behind them. Garth led the way to a depression, ringed by trees where the rest of the gang had gathered. Ike's wagon was parked there as well. His eyes searched desperately in the fading light from Maggie and Caleb, but he didn't see them.
Where are they?
In the wagon, Pilgrim. Nobody's bothered them. Here, give me that horse and go take a look for yourself.
Ike handed over the reins and ran to the wagon. When he'd seen the vehicle, he'd hoped that Maggie and Caleb would be in there, but now he had to see them with his own eyes before he would believe it.
Maggie! Maggie!
Ike!
Maggie scrambled from the wagon bed over the back of the driver's seat. Her fair hair shone under her bonnet, even in this bad light.
Oh, Ark!
Maggie threw herself into his arms, and he wrapped his arms around her and held her tightly, so tightly that it seemed nothing could ever pry them apart.
Well, ain't that touching?
Jeffries lounged next to the wagon with one shoulder leaned against the sideboards. He held his gun casually in his hand.
Did they hurt you or Caleb? Did they lay a hand on you?
We're all right. Caleb's sound asleep in the wagon. He's fine, Ike. Oh, when can we get out of here?
Maybe as soon as I tell them what they want to know.
Be a good idea if you went ahead and did that, Pilgrim.
They had the trial this afternoon, just like you thought they would.
So many people in town today, I figured that must be what was going on. How'd it come out?
You know what the verdict was. Guilty.
Yeah, that ain't no surprise. What are they going to do with the boss? They don't have no gallows built yet.
That's because they're not going to hang him here in Arrowhead. A deputy U.S. Marshal showed up just as the trial was over with a court order that gave him custody of Shade.
You call him Reverend Shade.
Reverend Shade.
Go on. What's this U.S. Marshal going to do with the boss?
He's going to take Reverend Shade to Yuma Prison. The hanging will take place there.
Yuma? Hell, that's clear across the territory. Why in blazes would the law want to take him all the way over there to hang him?
I don't have any idea. From the gossip I've heard about what went on in the courtroom, Marshal Thorpe doesn't know either. All he knows is that he got his orders and he intends to carry him out.
Thorpe, eh? So that's the fella's name?
Yep, Asa Thorpe.
Anybody heard of this fella Thorpe before?
I have. He's supposed to be a pretty tough hombre.
But he's just one man. We can take the Reverend away from him, no trouble.
I don't know Thorpe, but he'd be a damn fool to try to take the boss all the way across the territory by himself. Surprised he don't have a cavalry patrol with him, or a posse of deputies.
I heard he's going to deputize some men and take them with him.
What about Bodine and Two Wolves?
Yeah, those two are supposed to be hell on wheels, and they're the ones who captured Joshua in the first place. Are they going along?
No, Marshal Thorpe didn't want them going. From what I heard, he thinks they're gunfighters and doesn't want them along.
There's your answer, Garth. This so-called Marshal is a damn fool.
Maybe, maybe not. But he'd be smarter to take those two hellions with him. We'll take advantage of the fact that he ain't.
Ike saw Garth studying him. He didn't like the look on the outlaw's face, what he could see of it in the fading light, and he tightened his arm around Maggie's shoulders. Now that he had accomplished their bidding, were they going to kill him and his family?
Listen, I've done what you asked. I found out everything there was to find out. You promised you'd let us go if I helped you.
An evil, leering smile spread over Gonzalez's face.
No!
Put that pig sticker away, Gonzalez.
But the gringo's right. We don't need him no more.
I'll decide what we need and what we don't need. And I reckon the Pilgrim here can still be of some use to us.
Whatever it is you want from me, I'll do it, I swear.
Somebody get the Pilgrim a six-shooter.
Wait a minute. You're gonna give him a gun?
Yeah, that's right. Can't volunteer to go along with the U.S. Marshal unless he's armed, now can he?
You want me to go along as one of the deputies?
That's right. That way, when the time comes for us to make our move, we'll have you right there amongst them to help us.
But what can I do? I'm just a farmer.
You can point a gun and pull the trigger, can't you? That's what you're gonna do, Winslow. Marshal won't know you're with us, so you stick close to him. And when the shooting starts...
One of the outlaws brought a coiled shell belt with a holstered Colt attached to it. Garth shoved the weapon into Ike's stunned hands.
You take out this hog leg and blow that son of a bitch and badge toter's head off.
Matt and Sam were in the 10 grand that evening, nursing beers and talking with Archie Cochran, when Sheriff Flagg came into the saloon. The sheriff looked around, spotted the Blood Brothers leaning against the bar, and came over to them.
Evening, Sheriff. I hear you've got one more night to guard your prisoner, then he's not your responsibility anymore.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk to you fellas about.
You want us to spend the night at the jail like we've been doing? I'm not sure how Marshal Thorpe would feel about that.
Yeah, he made it pretty clear he doesn't have much use for us.
Listen, I know Thorpe's a pure D jackass, but I got to talk to you boys anyway. Private life.
We'll take a walk outside.
The three men left the saloon together and walked toward the sheriff's office.
Thorpe let it be known around town that he's not leaving with Shade until tomorrow morning, but that ain't true.
He's sneaking out of town tonight under cover of darkness.
That's right.
Maybe he's not as foolish as we thought after all.
I wouldn't say that. He's still bound and determined not to take you two with him. But I got me a hunch that you're going anyway.
You think so?
You've been mixed up in this whole deal so far. I just can't see you turning your backs on it now.
Well, it probably wouldn't be a good idea for us to tell a lawman that we're going to defy the wishes of a United States Marshal.
Don't you fellas know me better than that by now? I don't give a hoot in hell what Thorpe thinks. I just want Joshua Shade to make it to Yuma so he can dance at the end of a rope where he belongs.
All right. We thought we might trail along just to see what happens.
You'd better go get your horses ready to ride then, because Thorpe intends to pull out in less than half an hour. I didn't find out about it until just a little while ago, and I come to find you fellas as soon as I could.
How many deputies is he taking with him?
Yeah, he's got 9 men lined up to ride with him. There'll be 8 outriders all the time and a shotgun guard on the wagon box with the driver. Thorpe's planning on handling the shotgun himself, I think. One of the fellows going with him says he's a good hand with a wagon team.
Can you vouch for all the men going along on the trip?
Well, all but a couple of them. But the 2 I don't know don't look like any owl hoots I've ever seen.
I hope Thorpe's got enough sense to keep an eye on the 2 you don't know.
I'll say something to him before he leaves town. He ain't the friendliest fella I ever met, and he's right full of himself, no doubt about that. But I don't think he's dumb. He'll keep his eyes open for tricks.
So will we.
Their gear was still in their hotel rooms, even though they hadn't used those rooms since their first night in Arrowhead. It didn't take long for them to gather up those few things and head for the livery barn, where their horses were stabled. Sheriff Flagg had told them that Thorpe had the wagon parked behind the jail and would be taking Shade out the rear door, then swinging wide around town to intersect the main trail southwest of the settlement. It was a decent enough plan and stood a chance of fooling the outlaws, assuming that Thorpe wasn't right about the rest of the gang deserting Shade. Matt and Sam weren't going to believe that unless and until the journey to Yuma went off without a hitch. The elderly hostler was surprised to see them.
You boys leaving town in the middle of the night?
I thought we'd get a good start while the weather's cooler.
Well, I'm sorry to see you go. You've been good customers. Ain't caused me a lick of trouble. And things been right exciting since you boys rode into town. You draw trouble like honey draws flies.
So we've been told.
Too many times.
So long, old-timer.
Y'all come back any time now, here. Yeah?
They went around the barn, through some back alleys, and left town heading south, not following any trail. Once they were well clear of the settlement, they would cut west and pick up the wagon, hanging back so that Thorpe wouldn't realize he was being followed, but still close enough so that they could catch up in a hurry if any shooting started. According to what Flagg had told them before they bade the portly sheriff farewell, Thorpe didn't intend to follow the main road all the way to Tucson and board the train there. The biggest danger would come while he was transporting the prisoner in the wagon, so the sooner they made it to the railroad, the better. Once they were clear of the hills that ranged around Arrowhead, Thorpe could turn due south and reach the Southern Pacific sooner by heading for a little whistle-stop village near the Dragoon Mountains called Pancake Flats.
Do you think that Shade's gang will actually try to rescue him?
I'd bet a hat on it.
They haven't shown any signs of it so far.
It's because they're waiting for the right time. They knew they'd be in for a hard, bloody fight if they tried to bust him out of jail. It's a hell of a lot easier to waylay a wagon out on the trail, even with guards around it.
Yeah. Things have worked out pretty well so far for Shade, haven't they? We keep those lynch mobs from getting him. And then instead of being strung up there in Arrowhead as soon as the trial was over, then Thorpe shows up to take him all the way to Yuma, giving his gang an even better chance to bust him loose.
You think there's something fishy about Thorpe? Like, maybe he isn't a real marshal?
Oh, I think he's real enough. I got a pretty good look at his badge.
Anybody can pin on a badge.
And I took a gander at that court order, too, while Judge Stanfield had it spread out on the table. It was genuine.
So if Thorpe's really a marshal and that court order was a real thing, then what are you saying?
Just that it's a mite suspicious, him showing up right when he did. I'd like to know what prompted the Justice Department to come up with this business of taking Shade to Yuma.
Well, when we get done here, I reckon you can just ride on up to Washington and ask.
I wouldn't mind going to Washington one of these days. There are a lot of things there that could use straightening out.
Amen to that, brother.
They rode on into the night, angling southwest when they came to the main trail that led to Tucson. Flagg had told them the landmarks to look for, where the smaller trail to Pancake Flats turned off.
There'll be a big rock to the left of the trail that looks like the head of one of them Mexican dogs. You know, the ones with the pointy ears. About 50 yards past it is a lone pine tree. The Pancake Flats trail is just past that pine.
Now, as they approached a dark, bulky shape beside the trail, Sam pointed at it.
That must be the rock Sheriff Flagg was talking about.
Yeah. You can see the ears sticking up and the snout sticking out in front of them. Looks like a dog's head to me.
Sure enough, just past the big rock, a single pine tree stood solitary watch beside the trail. The Blood Brothers drew rein beside it and studied the ground in the light of a rising half moon.
Don't smell any dust. I don't think the wagon's come along here yet. We're ahead of Thorpe.
You sure about that?
Pretty sure. Let's get over there behind the rock and wait.
The Doghead Rock was big enough to shield them completely from the road. They had been there for about 15 minutes when the thudding of hoofbeats and the creaking of wagon wheels announced the approach of someone coming along the trail from Arrowhead. The wagon had an enclosed bed with a couple of small windows in its sides and one in the back. Slats had been nailed over those windows to form bars. They weren't as secure as iron bars, of course, but they would do for a short trip. Matt and Sam knew that the wagon ought to reach Pancake Flats and the railroad by nightfall the next day. A saddle horse was tied on to the back of the wagon, plodding along behind it. Two men were on the seat, one handling the reins attached to the six mules pulling the wagon, the other sitting there with the butt of a shotgun propped against his leg and the twin barrels extending skyward at an angle. The rising moon cast enough light for Matt and Sam to recognize Marshal Asa Thorpe as the shotgunner.
You ever seen a driver before?
I can't really tell in this light, but I don't think so.
There's something familiar about him. Can't quite place him, though. Reckon I must have seen him around Arrowhead sometime before we left.
He was one of the men Sheriff Flagg didn't know. I hope the sheriff had a chance to warn Thorpe to keep an eye on him.
Thorpe's got enough sense to do that. I hope.
The wagon and the outriders all swung onto the trail leading south to Pancake Flats. Matt and Sam watched them go, letting them get well ahead before they led their horses out of the shadows next to the rock and mounted up. Then they set off at an easy lope, heading south themselves and listening for the sound of gunshots in the night. By morning, the wagon had covered several miles without encountering any trouble. Exhaustion and the strain of worrying about his family had taken quite a toll on Ike Winslow, dulling him mentally and physically. He swayed a little on the seat next to Marshal Thorpe as he clutched the reins, slapping them against the backs of the mules from time to time to keep the animals moving. Thorpe was still as stiff and upright as he had been when the journey started. His head swiveled from side to side almost constantly as he kept a lookout for any sign of trouble. Garth and the other outlaws were going to have a hard time taking him by surprise. But that was his job, Ike reminded himself. If he wanted to save Maggie and Caleb, he had to kill Thorpe. He had never killed anybody, hadn't even been in a serious fight since he was a kid. All he'd done for years now was work hard and try to provide for his family. But a series of bad years on the farm had forced him to borrow money, and then more bad years had kept him from being able to pay it back. And almost before he knew it, the farm was gone, taken away by the bank. He had been able to scrape together enough money to buy supplies for the trip west. If he hadn't already had the wagon, left over from better times, he wouldn't have been able to afford it. Maggie had been mighty good about the whole thing. She knew Ike was doing his best, she had told him, and she thought heading west to make a new start was a fine idea. Maybe deep down she didn't really believe those things. Ike suspected that she didn't. But she said them anyway. Now he had led her right into trouble that might be the end of them all. Lord knows what was happening to her even now. You couldn't expect brutal, ruthless men like Shade's gang to keep their hands off of a young, pretty woman for very long. Sickness roiled Ike's gut as he tried to shove the horrible images out of his head. He had to concentrate completely on the job he had been given, he told himself. That was all he could allow himself to think about. Kill Thorpe. Turn into an outlaw like the rest of Shade's men. Even if he somehow survived this ordeal, he would be hunted for the rest of his life as a murderer, a wanted fugitive who had shot down a federal lawman. The new life he had hoped for when they started west was gone, slipping through his fingers like smoke.
Rein him in!
Something wrong, Marshal?
No, we just need to give the mules and the horses a little rest. Better stretch your legs while you got the chance, Winslow.
Ike had given the Marshal his real name when he asked to join the group of volunteers going along with the wagon. He didn't see that it mattered if they knew who he was. He didn't know what he would have done if Thorpe had refused to bring him along, so he emphasized his experience at handling a wagon team. And of course it was true that he had driven a team of mules hundreds of miles already. He'd had no trouble so far with this team. Thorpe went to the back of the wagon, which had a door set into it. A heavy padlock held the door closed. The marshal reached into his pocket and pulled out the key to the padlock, and as Ike dropped to the ground beside the wagon, Thorpe tossed the key to him. Instinctively, Ike caught it.
Unlock the door. We'll give Shade a little air.
Swallowing nervously, Ike went to the door and stuck the key in the lock.
Come on out there for a minute if you want, Shade. Draw your gun, Winslow.
Ike pulled the Colt revolver the outlaws had given him. He let the weapon dangle at his side as he watched the door. The walnut grips felt odd in his hand. He had used a rifle and a shotgun in the past, but he'd never handled a six-gun all that much. He wasn't sure he could hit anything with it except at close range, like the width of a wagon seat. Ike caught his breath as Shade appeared in the doorway at the rear of the wagon. His confinement over the past week had caused a pallor to set in on the outlaw's face. His hair was matted and tangled, his eyes sunken and haunted by unknowable demons. His suit was dirty and disheveled. He looked like a lunatic, Ike thought. And from everything he had heard about Joshua Shade, that was an apt description. The man was crazy as a bedbug, but still dangerous. Ike felt a chill go through him as those haunted eyes swept over him.
You can walk around a little if you want. We'll give you some water and something to eat. Just don't try anything funny.
Shade didn't say anything. He just stared at Thorpe with those baleful eyes for a long moment, then turned to look at Ike. Ike had to look away.
That's right, boy. Avert your eyes from the avenging angel of the Lord.
I'll get the canteen.
And a little jerky, too.
Shay took a long drink from the canteen, his prominent Adam's apple bobbing in his thin neck as he swallowed. He smiled as he handed it back to Ike.
I'll take particular delight in flaying every inch of skin from your body, you foul, fornicating sinner, so that you take days to die screaming in agony.
You won't be torturing anybody else, Shade. Now take that jerky and get back in there. Lock up after him, Winslow.
Shade did what the marshal told him. Ike was glad when he swung the door closed and couldn't see that evil, smiling face anymore. But he knew he would have trouble shaking the image from his mind, maybe for the rest of his life. However long that was, Ike didn't expect it to be very long.
Oh, when can we have the woman?
When Joshua's free again, Gonzalez. I ain't taking no more chances. I want her safe and sound to use as leverage against that husband of hers, just as long as we might still need him.
Along with the other members of the gang, they were riding along about 2 miles behind the wagon carrying Joshua Shade. Garth had spotted it earlier through his spyglass when they paused at the top of a long swell that provided a good view of the territory to the south. Earlier, when the wagon tracks had left the main road and turned south, Garth had studied the map that Shade always used when he was planning their jobs. It hadn't taken him long to figure out what the marshal was doing. Thorpe wanted to get his prisoner on a train as soon as possible, because that was the fastest and safest way to transport Shade to Yuma. So instead of going all the way to Tucson to catch the train, he had struck out across country toward the railroad, following a meager track that barely qualified as a trail. Garth turned his head to look at the others. Mrs. Winslow rode double with Jeffries. They had abandoned the wagon back where the gang had been camped before. It wasn't that Garth trusted the dapper gunman not to molest the woman, but he probably trusted him more than he did Gonzalez and the other men. Mrs. Winslow had her baby in her arms, cradling the kid against her. Garth felt an unaccustomed twinge of pity. He had killed plenty of times in his life, men, women, children, whoever he needed to kill to get what he wanted. But every now and then, such as now, some fleeting, unwanted memories came back to him. Memories of a time before he was a killer and an outlaw, when he'd had a woman and a young'un of his own. With a grimace, Garth turned around to face front again. Those days were long gone and good riddance to him. They ended badly anyway, and he'd just as soon not think about them.
Hey, Garth. I think I saw a couple of riders up there, off to the east of the trail.
Garth looked where Gonzalez was pointing and didn't see anything. He reined in and motioned for the others to do likewise. Fishing the spyglass out of his saddlebags, he extended it and lifted it to his eye, squinting through it. Garth focused in on a pair of riders. They were too far away for him to make out any details about them, but they were also a good quarter of a mile east of the trail leading to Pancake Flats.
Just a couple of cowhands, more than likely. There's some cattle spreads down this way, but they're pretty scattered. Maybe they're just drifters passing through these parts.
You can't be sure of that.
You heard what Winslow said. Marshall wasn't taking anybody with him except some outriders. Whole bunches with the wagon. I reckon wouldn't hurt anything to be sure. The rest of us will ride on ahead and circle around the wagon to the west so as we can set up an ambush. Larkin, you and Glenister go check out those riders over east a ways.
The two outlaws Garth had selected for the chore nodded in understanding.
What do you want us to do about them?
Oh, hell, might as well play it safe. Wait until the shooting starts, then kill both the sons of bitches.
During the morning, Matt and Sam had swung gradually to the east as they followed the wagon, so they wouldn't be directly behind the vehicle. They didn't want Thorpe to check his back trail, spot them, and then take them for members of Shade's gang. Nor did they want the outlaws to realize they were riding herd on the wagon. With some distance between them and Thorpe's party, even if Shade's men noticed them, they might not think the two of them had any connection to the wagon.
Do you think the gang will try to take Shade away from the marshal before the wagon gets to Pancake Flats?
Well, if I was a no-account outlaw, that's what I'd try to do. It'd be harder to take him off the train. Not impossible, mind you, but sure harder.
That's what I thought, too. How would you go about doing it?
Well, again, if I was a no-good murdering skunk like Shade's man, I reckon I'd try to get ahead of the wagon and set up some sort of ambush.
You know, Marshal Thorpe has to be thinking the same thing. He'll be ready for something like that.
Being ready for something and being able to stop it when it starts happening are two different things.
I can't argue with that.
They'll find a good spot with plenty of cover and then try to gun down as many of the outriders as they can in the first volley. And men on horseback will sweep in and finish off the others.
There'll be a lot of lead flying around that way. Shade might get hit by a stray bullet.
Well, the wagon looks sturdy enough to stop some of the slugs anyway, and as soon as Shade hears guns going off, he'll hug the floor as tight as he can. Chances are he'd come through without a scratch.
So what do we do to stop it?
Bushwhack the bushwhackers?
I like the way you think. Dirty and underhanded.
I'll give any man an even break, including outlaws, when it's just him and me. But when they're planning on murdering innocent folk, they've stepped over a line. They don't deserve any more consideration than a nest of rattlers.
I was just joshing you, Matt. I agree completely.
Well, I guess we need to get out in front of the wagon, then.
That's just what I was thinking.
Only a few minutes had gone by before Matt pointed westward.
Look yonder!
Riders!
Quite a few of them by the looks of it. That's got to be Shade's gang trying to cut off the wagon.
Marshal Thorpe's bound to notice that dust.
Yeah, but he won't know what's causing it. Could be some cowboys hazing a jag of cattle from one place to another. Thorpe will have to keep the wagon moving, dust or no dust.
So much for an ambush. It's a race now.
Yeah, a race Thorpe can't win in that wagon.
Without saying anything, both of them veered to the west, angling toward the wagon now. It was likely the marshal was going to need their help before too much more time passed.
Jesus!
Matt jerked his head around and saw a couple of riders pounding after him and Sam, maybe 200 yards back.
Damn, we've got company!
Shade's men!
Bound to be! They must have spotted us and sent those hombres to keep us busy while they hit the wagon! The fat's in the fire now, boy!
Damn! Wasn't supposed to be any gunplay till we started the ball.
Too late now, Garth. Let's go kill those gringo bastards and get the Reverend out of there.
Garth twisted in the saddle.
Jeffries! Take the woman and the kid and fall back. Keep them out of the fight.
Jeffries looked like he wanted to argue, but then he shrugged and hauled his horse's head to the side, peeling away from the rest of the gang. In the lead, Garth veered his mount slightly to the east on a course that would intersect with that of the wagon. He wanted to stop the vehicle and get Joshua Shade out of there as quickly as possible. The longer Shade was locked up, the more chance that something bad could happen to him, like being hit by one of the stray bullets that were about to start flying around. Up ahead, the wagon careened past some boulders and a clump of scrubby mesquite. As the outlaws drew closer, Garth could see that stupid Pilgrim Winslow slashing the reins at the mules, driving them on to greater speed. That was just the opposite of what the bastard was supposed to be doing, Garth thought. By now, he should have pulled his gun and plugged that damn marshal. Instead, it looked like he was trying to help Thorpe get away with his prisoner. Winslow was going to be damn sorry about that, Garth vowed as he leaned forward in the saddle and pounded after the wagon.
Whip that team up harder, Winslow. Damn it, make them run!
To Ike's horror, one of the deputies suddenly flung his arms in the air, throwing his rifle away, and toppled out of the saddle.
Keep those mules moving!
The marshal got his knees up on the seat and started crawling out onto the top of the enclosed wagon bed. Ike glanced over his shoulder and saw that Thorpe had flattened out and drawn his pistol, although he still had the shotgun at his side. Thorpe edged over to the side so that he could reach down to one of the little windows that let light and air into the wagon. He was going to kill Shade. That thought sprang into Ike's head. If the outlaws closed in and looked like they were about to stop the wagon, Thorpe planned to shoot through the window and kill the prisoner, rather than allow him to be freed. With Shade dead, the gang would have no reason at all to spare the lives of Maggie and Caleb. Ike couldn't let that happen. He knew now what he had to do. He twisted on the seat and dragged the Colt out of its holster. Thorpe wasn't even looking at him. It would be a simple matter to shoot the marshal. But as Ike turned, holding the gun in his right hand, the reins slipped out of his left. He made a grab for them, but missed as they fell to the floorboard of the driver's box. The mules were running flat out now, and if the reins slid off the box, Ike would have no way of stopping the team. He lunged after the lines. At that moment, the wagon hit a rough spot in the trail, jolting heavily as it bounced. Ike was already off balance as he reached for the trailing reins. He felt himself thrown from the seat, and something crashed into his head with stunning force. The pain filled his entire being, washing everything else away, and swept him along with it into oblivion. Matt and Sam pulled their rifles from the saddle boots as they raced toward the wagon, closing in from the east as the outlaws closed in from the west.
We ought to do something about those varmints behind us. Some of those slugs are coming up mighty too close for comfort.
I was thinking the same thing. On three.
One, two, three!
The Blood Brothers hauled back on the reins at the same time. Winchesters came up as if synchronized. Both outlaws went backward off their horses, punched out of the saddles by the .44-40 slugs that smashed into their chests.
That takes care of those two.
Let's see what we can do about the others.
The deputies were putting up a valiant fight, Matt saw, but one of them was down already, and they had been badly outnumbered to start with.
Something's happened to the driver. The team's a runaway.
It's gonna wreck if it keeps going like that.
That's the least of our worries right now.
That was true. Another deputy pitched off his horse as outlaw lead riddled him. Matt and Sam were close enough to join the fight now, though, and they did so as they came up slightly behind and to the side of the gang. That sudden hail of unexpected shots took a heavy toll. Half a dozen members of the gang were down before they knew what was going on. Sam came alongside the vehicle and saw Thorpe starting to swing the shotgun toward him.
Don't shoot, Marshal!
Thorpe recognized him and held off from the greener's triggers. Instead, the lawman twisted back the other way. Sam had already pulled ahead and was now galloping alongside the runaway mules. A glance at the driver's box showed him that the driver was crumpled on the floorboard, either unconscious or dead. He lay near the edge of the far side from Sam, and as the wagon gave another bounce and lurch, the man began to slip off. There was nothing Sam could do for him except hope that he fell clear of the wagon wheels. The driver slid out of sight and was left behind in the boiling dust. Sam brought his horse closer to the lead mule on the left side. In the past, he had pulled off the trick he was about to attempt, but it was damn dangerous. Sam slipped his feet out of the stirrups and threw himself from the saddle. For a harrowing instant, he hung in midair between his horse and the mule. Then he crashed down on the mule's back. A pained grimace twisted Sam's face as he tangled his fingers in the mule's mane and hung on for dear life.
Whoa! Whoa, you jackass!
Sam didn't want the mules to slow too much, though. Those outlaws were still back there giving chase, so the mules needed to keep running. As Sam twisted his neck to look over his shoulder, he saw to his surprise that the gang had fallen back. From the looks of it, they were peeling off and abandoning the attack. To his great relief, Sam spotted Matt and saw that his blood brother appeared to be all right. Matt rode toward the wagon as Sam pulled back on the harness again and slowed the mules even more.
Whoa!
Marshal Thorpe slid from the top back onto the seat.
What happened to the driver?
I don't know. He fell off a ways back. I couldn't tell if he was still alive or not.
The shooting had stopped entirely now, and the dust trailing off to the north made it clear that the outlaws were leaving. Matt rode up, as glad to see that Sam was all right as Sam had been about him. Behind him, the surviving deputies straggled in, only four of them now. That meant that four men had been lost in this attack. Four lives lost, more than likely, just so Joshua Shade could have his evil life snuffed out at the end of a hang rope in one place and not another. That knowledge put a bitter taste in the mouths of both Matt and Sam. Sam slid down from the mule and retrieved the reins that had fallen earlier. He wrapped them around the brake lever while Thorpe was climbing down from the seat.
I have to check on the prisoner.
Matt had been reloading his Colts, the first thing he did after any fracas. He snapped the cylinder closed on the second Colt and filled both hands, pointing the irons at the door.
I'll cover you, Marshal.
Shade, if you're anywhere near that door, stand away from it. If you try anything, we'll shoot to kill.
Joshua Shade huddled at the far end of the wagon bed. For a second, Matt thought the outlaw chief was dead. But then Shade raised his head and glared at them. His eyes were like some crazed animal's.
Loco as ever.
Stand up, Shade. Were you hit during all that shooting?
The Lord's hand was upon me. He shielded me from harm.
If you had somebody looking out for you, it was more likely the devil.
All right, I'm satisfied. You can sit down again.
Then he turned and looked at the surviving deputies, who were keeping watch in case Shade's gang returned.
Are the others dead?
I'm afraid so, Marshal. Check their bodies to make sure. Except for that Winslow fellow, we didn't find him. And I see now he ain't on the wagon either.
He fell off. You can look again while you're rounding up the horses and loading the dead men on them.
You're taking the bodies with you?
I'm not gonna leave them for the damn coyotes, if that's what you mean. They were good men, and they died in service to the law. I'll see to it that they're laid to rest properly.
I think that's a good idea, Marshal. Matt and I will help.
That is, if you'll let us go with you the rest of the way to Pancake Flats.
I've lost half my men, and it's likely those outlaws will come back. So I don't really have any choice but to allow you and two wolves to come along, do I, Bodine?
Always nice to be wanted, ain't it?
What the hell happened? You outnumbered them 3-1.
Those two hombres off to the east were Bodine and two wolves. They killed Larkin and Glenister and then hit us from the flank. I never saw anybody could shoot like those two.
How many men did we lose?
10, Jeffries. We still outnumber them by quite a bit, though. We'll just regroup and go after Joshua again.
The members of the gang were riding slowly south, following the wagon. They had picked up Jeffries and the woman and the kid, then started on the trail again. The woman still rode doubled with Jeffries, holding the kid in her arms.
Mr. Garth, did you see what happened to Isaac?
Your husband? I don't have no idea, ma'am. The dust was too thick to see much. For all I know, he's still driving that wagon with the marshal. Last I saw, the marshal was still fine.
He didn't do what you told him to do?
Evidently not, or Joshua would be free by now.
Good. I'm glad he didn't help you. I knew he couldn't kill a man in cold blood.
Ma'am, you do know that by going against us, that husband of yours has put your life in danger, as well as your kids. If he ain't gonna help us...
Garth left the rest of it unsaid, but he was sure Mrs. Winslow knew what he meant. If the Pilgrim wasn't going to cooperate, there was no need to keep his family alive. She had the sense to turn pale and looked scared, at least.
Hey, Garth! Somebody's coming!
Garth turned back around and saw a man staggering across the semi-arid landscape toward them. Heat haze blurred him for a moment, but then he came closer, and Garth recognized him.
Ike!
Hang on to her.
Blood had sheeted down the right side of Winslow's face, giving him a gruesome appearance. He weaved from side to side as he walked, as if he could barely stay on his feet. Winslow stopped and stood there, swaying as Garth and Gonzalez reined in.
What happened? You were supposed to plug that damn marshal.
I tried. I had my gun out. But then the wagon hit a rough spot in the trail. Bounced so hard it threw me off the seat. I hit my head on something. I'm sorry. I don't remember anything after that.
Ike!
Hold her!
Garth knelt beside Winslow and rolled the Pilgrim onto his back. Winslow's chest rose and fell jerkily, so he was still alive, but he appeared to be out cold.
I can cut his throat if you want, Garth. Then we can have some fun with the woman.
Not until we get Joshua back from that marshal, dammit! We got extra horses now. Throw him on one and tie him to the saddle.
Why do we need him? He couldn't even do a simple thing like killing Thorpe.
I don't know, but it won't cost us anything to take him along.
He was getting sick and tired of everybody questioning his orders. Joshua had made it clear that Garth was to be in charge if anything ever happened to him, but Jeffries and Gonzalez didn't seem to remember that. He needed to do something to remind them that he was the boss, at least for now, and bringing Winslow along was part of that.
We're gonna split up.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
There aren't as many of us as there were when we started out.
That wagon won't get to the railroad until close to nightfall. We got time to circle around and set up an ambush like I wanted to do all along. A dozen men will do that. The others will push the wagon right in the trap we set up. This time it'll work.
You know, Marshal, you didn't seem all that surprised to see Matt and I when we showed up to help you fight off those outlaws.
That's because I wasn't.
The two men were on the wagon seat, with Sam handling the reins now as the vehicle rolled south toward Pancake Flats. His horse was tied on behind the wagon. Matt had the point about 100 yards in front, with the remaining four outriders spread out to the sides and behind the wagon.
You're going to have to explain that.
I don't have to explain anything. I work for the United States government. But I don't suppose it would hurt anything now to admit that things worked out pretty much like I planned. At least where you and Bodine are concerned.
All right. Now I'm really curious.
I've heard a lot about you two young hellions. You can't stay away from trouble. You seek it out, even though you claim to be peace-loving hombres.
That's not exactly true, but close enough for government work, as they say.
I knew that if I told you and Bodine you couldn't come along, you'd be bound and determined to do it anyway. I figured that you'd follow along, thinking that you were putting one over on me.
So when the outlaws attacked, as you were sure they would, we'd be in position to hit them either from the side or from behind, taking them by surprise.
That's right, and it sort of worked out that way. We're still here, and Shade's still our prisoner, and we did considerable damage to the gang.
But not so much that they'll give up.
No, I figure they'll be back. It wouldn't surprise me if they hit us again before we reach Pancake Flats.
The sun was lowering in the western sky now. In another hour, it would be dark. If everything went according to plan, the wagon would reach the settlement and the railroad about then. Which meant that if the outlaws wanted to stop them before that happened, another attack would come within the next hour.
Why do it this way to start with? I can understand why the government wants Shay to be hanged in Yuma. They can make a bigger show of it that way.
You sound like you know how things like that work.
My father was Cheyenne. His people have had to deal with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I do indeed know how petty, hidebound bureaucracies work, Marshal. I don't expect that the Justice Department is any different. Why didn't you bring a troop of cavalry with you to escort the prisoner to Yuma? That wouldn't be so unusual, would it?
No, I suppose not. In fact, I thought about that and wired the Chief Marshal's office about it. I was told that no soldiers were available at the moment, and that the situation with Shade was too pressing to wait until they were. I was also ordered to keep the involvement of local law enforcement and civilians to a minimum.
A frown creased Sam's forehead as he thought about what Thorpe had just said. That explained why the marshal had recruited only a minimal amount of volunteers. He was just following orders. But why in the hell had the chief marshal given him those orders in the first place? Thorpe's superior had to have known that trying to take Shade across Arizona territory with only a small group of deputies to guard him was bound to attract rescue attempts by the crazed outlaw's gang. Before Sam could ponder that puzzling question anymore, Matt turned his horse and rode back to the wagon. He fell in alongside the seat.
I don't like the looks of the country up ahead. There are a couple of bluffs flanking the trail. Be a good spot for an ambush.
Can we go around them?
Well, maybe. The terrain looks pretty rugged on both sides of the trail, though. Lots of arroyos and ridges. None of them are too deep or too high, but they'd still be hard to get that wagon through them. Better slow down and let me scout that cut between the bluffs before you go through there.
That sounds like a good way to get yourself shot if there is an ambush.
Now, won't be the first time I've waltzed into a place where I might get myself shot, now will it?
Unfortunately, no.
I'll be back. Damn!